Hey, thank you very much for the invitation. I'm glad to have the opportunity to speak again because I spoke on a similar topic here 2 years ago and I completely botched it. So I'm going to get to try again and do a better job. Oh, what I'm going to do, there is a bit of pedagogical aspect to this talk. I want to explain a little bit about what the A model coupled to topological gravity and how mathematicians understand this and compute the correlation functions in this theory by what's known as Gromov-Witten theory. And even though one of the successes is that mathematicians can define what we mean by these correlation functions, we actually have a working mathematical definition. In other words, we know how to evaluate the path integral measure, concretely and explicitly and exactly. Unfortunately, we know how to define it, but we don't know how to really calculate it. So for example, these famous numbers for genus 1 invariance of the quintic threefold, this generating formula for the holomorphic from the holomorphic anomaly is still not known mathematically. All we can do is we can just check it number by number. So there's still a lot of very interesting foundational results needing to be developed in mathematics. But the one technique that really has worked very well is the technique of localization when the target space admits a torus action. And this is well known in the physics literature, and we as physicists are consumers of this mathematical technology, is that we can go ahead and take these results and use them to do computations, and this is well known all over the physics literature. So I want to review a little bit about that and how localization comes up in mathematics. And the new thing that I'll get to at the end is the via string theory, is how to go ahead and take this and put this back into starting to derive this from string theory rather than from mathematics, so we can have better insight into what localization really means in the language of string theory. And so let's see. So for the time of this talk, I guess when am I supposed? I'm supposed to take a break and then go.
Well, it depends on how long your talk is. If you go beyond 1 hour, and if it's substantially part of the talk, left, we can take a break at 1 hour. Otherwise, we can.
Okay. Okay. We'll just. Okay. So. So let me review the A model. So let me just write down the action, and I'll. I actually wrote this down this year, so I don't. I started off by writing down the action wrong, so which I don't think I will do. But just if I copy it, I couldn't possibly get it wrong. So we have other terms also. So this is the A model, and what in this twisted model, the supersymmetry becomes BRST symmetry, and I'll write this as a variation. Some Christoffel terms which I don't need. And I've done something wrong because my indices don't match, so I guess I'll probably push the button.
The line there is
at
the file above. Over the left down.
Indices have to match. Okay. So we have this. We have this symmetry, and I'm putting this here because I want to go ahead and modify this and modify these rules. So I'll be coming back to this later, so I want to go ahead and put this down. So these are the well-known symmetries. So the Lagrangian becomes essentially the Kähler class plus some some Q variation, so we can go ahead and do calculations. We can expand in the Kähler class. We see that that either from the action or from this term, we can see that the path integral localizes to holomorphic maps. So the target X is complex and Kähler, and path integral localizes to holomorphic maps. And the we can write down the path integral measure formally. And how do you really compute it? Well, that's what Gromov-Witten theory is all about. So the other feature is that so we have the writing this as usual in terms of the BRST operator, we can compute the BRST cohomology. And this is isomorphic to the Durham cohomology by the usual procedure. If we have some so let me follow Witten's convention, use capital letters for real indices and lowercase letters for holomorphic and anti-holomorphic indices, is that here, if we have a Q cohomology class, it can be shown not to involve the psis at all. It only involves the phis and the chis, and the mapping will take this to sum of fi of x dxi1 with dxin.
I1 to
this is a multi-index, so here I is multi-index notation. And where here is that x1 to x, let's say k, whatever the dimension is, are local coordinates on x corresponding to the world street fields phi in the 2D theory. This is just the usual story about how this goes, and this is going to get modified to do this equivariantly in the language of string theory. Okay, so then if we want to go ahead and compute path integrals, we would now, or correlation functions, we would take a collection of Durham cohomology classes, and by the BRST cohomology, we could just take any representatives. We'll get the same answers to the correlation functions. We pick some marked points on the world sheet. So over there, to these on this side, we'll have observables, which I'll write this way, which can be evaluated at insertion points. And we want to go ahead and compute correlation functions by a path integral. So we'll have some Kähler class here. Maybe coupling constant put in. And of course the operators. And we want to go ahead and calculate this, and we see that by the zero modes that we have.
Sorry, why did you pull out the that out of the path integral?
Why did I pull?
He's doing it in a
sub. So I guess what I would want to do is the usual way I would sum over homology classes. Sorry, thanks. So I would pull this out of the path integral because I would since this is a topological invariant, so this is equal to if I let beta be the the class we're doing closed string theory here, that this is just omega, the topological intersection number omega dot beta. So it pulls out as we sum over the different instanton sectors, the usual stuff. And then within each sector, we have to look at our zero modes. The zero modes is that so we need to have the equal numbers of the zero modes will pair up when we perform the path integral. So it's the difference of the zero modes. There's for the chi, if we look at the index structure of chi, these are given by sections, by holomorphic sections of the pullback of the tangent bundle. That's the these. And then the size, these are 0-1 forms. These are 0-1 forms on the world sheet with values in the holomorphic tangent bundle. So this will correspond to a first Dolbeau cohomology. And the net difference is given by the Riemann-Roch theorem, which is chi of phi star tx. And this is c1 of x dot beta plus the dimension of x. So what we need to know is that the is that for this path integral to be non-zero or by ghost number considerations, the sum of the cohomology degrees of omega I must be equal to c1 of x dot beta plus dimension of x. So this is what the condition has to be to get a sensible, well-defined, non-anomalous, non-zero correlation function.
So this is equal to non-zero for the zero.
This is right now. I have not coupled to topological gravity yet. Right. Yeah. So you could say this for. I could do this for a fixed world sheet. With a fixed metric at any genus. This is still okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no. This is, thanks. 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 Okay, now when we couple to topological gravity, I'm not going to talk about in any detail because we're still working out some of the details there. So I guess I should say that what I get to at the end will be joint work with my student Josh Guffin. So this is in progress. But when we couple to topological gravity, the dimension of the moduli space of instantons, we have the same thing we had before. But now we have to add on the number of moduli for the metric, together with the location of the insertion points. So here, n is the number of insertion points. And the way mathematicians usually write this is c1 of x dot beta plus the dimension of x minus 3 times 1 minus g plus n. This number is the virtual dimension of Gromov-Witten theory. So as is well known, if you have a space of holomorphic maps, the dimension can be quite pathological. So we know on a Calabi-Yau target, the dimension of the space of maps is supposed to be zero. Yet we have all these multiple covers. If we have once we have one holomorphic curve, we can go ahead and take all multiple covers of this, and then this is supposed to have dimension zero. So if we have Calabi-Yau, dimension of x is 3, c1 of x is trivial, no insertion points, and the virtual dimension is zero.
Insertion points of different, I mean, there's something funny there. If you have a Keter class, it doesn't matter how many insertions you have.
Right, because then what would happen is that then the condition will be that the sum of the cohomology classes that we insert has to match up to the dimensions. So this way is that we can always add one codimension, complex codimension in one class, and have that absorbed by adding one more insertion. So that's right. This is a tautology. We can add one to both sides by adding one to the cohomology degree by putting in the Carroll class, and adding one by adding one more insertion point. So, this is where we're.
So you're assuming particular operators.
I'm assuming. Well, this is given if we have n operators for a genus G world shape, we always have to get this to go ahead and have our insertion make sense. So in other words, the formula is that this has to be equal to the sum of the codimensions of the operators after coupling the topological value. But anyhow, this is the ghost number anomaly after coupling the topological gravity, and this is it has to match the ghost number of the operators. Okay, so this is just
codimensions of the operators.
By codimensions, so by codimensions, I mean either they're either I could talk in terms of their charges under the conserved BRST or the cohomology degree. So in the language I'm using. Complex geometry language. So let's say HI, let me put omega I will be an H2QI of X. Then I would call QI the codimension, and then this would be the sum of QI. So I can take odd cohomology classes if I want and insert operators for that, and then QI would be a half integer.
But that's just the same thing as the ghost number?
This is exactly the same thing as a ghost number. So coming back, I could have written this in terms of the, if I give, phi charge 0, and then chi and psi charges plus or minus 1, in the way, since I didn't write it down, I hesitate to pick a sign. And then what will happen is that chi will correspond to the degree of a differential form, so that will just raise the bump up the ghost number by 1.
Is there a possibility of operator to be integrated over the surface above the Hutton point? And that
right.
Contribute differently.
Right. Well, so then we can go ahead and have gravitational descendants in this theory also. But again, since I'm not talking about the topological gravity sector, but you can do that as well. Yeah, certainly. But the point is that. Is that either from the zero, physically from the zero mode count, or mathematically from the Gromov-Witten theory, we happily end up at exactly the same place, is that this is the condition that we need to have for our correlation functions to make sense and be non-trivial, be possibly non-trivial. Yeah, this is part of what algebraic geometers do for employment. Yeah, is they things like that. They take some classes where you take a geometric condition, and then they find ways to use this technology to compute them, even though they don't necessarily come from inserting operators into physical theory.
So there's
a technology to do that. And one the most important example to my mind is the theory of relative Gromov-Witten invariance, where you go ahead and specify.
But that's still local, that's point by point still.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you have this tangency condition. Sorry, mm-hmm. You could explain, but
yeah.
My question is not the local question.
Okay, well maybe I didn't understand the question, but like in relative Gromov-Witten theory, we could have maps from a world sheet to a target which have certain tangencies along a divisor. But you're considering that a local question at these points?
At each point is
okay.
A local question.
Okay,
my question is, could you correlate two points? Like the two points lie on, not on a given divisor, but the relative position on the image is such and such. I don't know.
I see. So for example, one thing might be you know, could it be that your 3 points should lie on a line, as an example?
Like
yeah, those, again, those are things that algebraic geometers have been thinking about since antiquity. And in fact, this is what I used to do before I started spending time thinking about string theory.
But you cannot formulate those kind of questions.
You cannot formulate them in Gromov-Witten theory, but just what you do is you go ahead and apply Gromov-Witten theory to them. And the way to, should I take the time of physicists who don't really care about these questions? I mean, this is, you know, these questions have a way of coming back over and over again. So, you know, I was interested in counting curves on Calabi-Yau threefolds, you know, long before I even knew what string theory was. But so what you do is instead of studying lines, for example, you take the totality of lines together with a point. This is how we used to approach this question. And then what we would do is we would take a map, we would take the set of all lines, then we would look at the set of pairs of lines inside some Calabi-Yau. So this would be some map between some spaces. And then what we would do is we would go ahead and the case where we'd have this, which is what we want to study, is when we look and we look for points over which this map, this is 3-1. So this is what was called multiple point theory. So there are topological and geometric ways to go ahead and take spaces which might have different dimensions and find the expected size of the locus over which the maps would be 3-1. So this was there was a lot of research on this in the 1980s, and this hasn't really come back yet in full glory in Gromov-Witten theory. So maybe you can do that. So as you can see, it's a non-local question. We need the local properties to formulate the question, and then you have to use the global property about the maps of spaces. So this is how I would try to do that. But yeah, this hasn't been done fully. That's fine. Okay.
Sounds like twister-like in the question.
Like a twister-like, how so?
Yeah. In these twister string amplitudes, you find that the amplitudes localize and collinear.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So that's right. Yeah. Right. Okay. So. Okay. Now, where's the equivariant? Of course, now I understand the problems. So the other side, I've now taken my first 5 minutes of the talk. So what does equivariant theory mean?
So in this case, your time map is 4-1.
Yeah. Well, so okay, now I perform a scale transformation and continue with the talk. Okay, so my groups I'll have would be U1 or U1 to some power. And but let's just do for U1, what we have is that for each such torus, we have a classifying space BT, and the bundle over it, which with a contractible space, and so here, for example, BU1 can be taken to be CP infinity. Do this, and we what we do is we change the topology of X. So here X will be some space admitting a holomorphic torus action, and we change the topology to a different space XT, which is the fiber product of X with ET over BT. And what this really does, so here, this is it replaces a fiber bundle of tori with a fiber bundle of x's. So the fiber of this is x, but it's just x smeared out over the whole space in a way that takes into account the whole equivariant action. And the equivariant cohomology of x is by definition the ordinary cohomology of xt. So, for example, the equivariant cohomology of a point is the ordinary cohomology of BT. And for this would be a polynomial ring in variables, one variable for each torus that we would have. This being the generator of the cohomology of CP infinity. So these have degree 2. Okay, so what this means is that since we've changed the topology of X, we have to change the A model. So before I change the A model, let me say a bit about what we want to change it to match the mathematics. So one nice model, well, let me just give an example first of this for Pn. The ordinary cohomology of Pn is a polynomial ring in the hyperplane class where the n plus first power of the hyperplane class gets set to 0 for dimension reasons. And then for the equivariant cohomology of Pn, let me take the example where t is, just for simplicity, t is u1, and my action is e to the I beta acts on the space by e to the I a1 a0 theta x0 to e to the I an theta xn. So we take charges a0 to an for the action. That in this case, we have a new symbol p that we include. We need new element lambda for the equivariant cohomology. And instead of having n copies of the same thing, we have n copies of different things, which is a slight equivariant shift of these p's. And this turns out to be the equivariant cohomology ring. And if you've done these localization calculations, I'm sure you've seen this. But let me give another way that's actually, to my mind, perhaps, you know, more explicit and maybe more useful ultimately in physics. I haven't seen this too much in print. The only place I know this is in a paper of, Greg Moore was one of the authors of a survey paper on this about 13 years ago. I don't remember. So there's this.
The equivariant one is infinite dimensional?
The equivariant one is infinite dimensional, yes, because this, again, the geometry is now infinite dimensional. And the cohomology is infinite dimensional. Right. But what we have here, for example, is that we have, again, remember that each equivariant space has the original space embedded as a fiber, so we can always restrict to the finite dimensional space. And what this is a lifting of the hyperplane class to the full infinite dimensional space. But one thing is, it doesn't make sense. H itself does not make sense in this infinite dimensional space, and we'll see why explicitly in a way relevant to string theory in just a few minutes. Or a few minutes multiplied by whatever time scale we're working at. Okay. And so another thing about this is, if we take P restricted to one of the fixed points, so let QI be one of the torus fixed points. If we take P and restrict it to this point, and let me just put a T about this to remind you, I'm still working equivariantly. So now when I restrict to this point, working equivariantly, this still has the lambda in its cohomology. And this is equal to AI lambda. So again, you know, everything's consistent about how this works. This is how algebraic geometers would think about this, and I think this is how these formulas usually appear in the physics literature. But a slightly more, a way that's maybe more explicit and uses less algebraic geometry. So what this just says is that if I take all the n plus 1 equivariant hyperplanes, this is the cohomology class of each of the equivariant hyperplanes, and it just says that if I take n plus 1 hyperplanes in projective space, they don't meet. So that's how algebraic geometers would think about this. But instead, let's take, back to the general case, let's take the space of differential forms, and then we compute the cohomology by taking the exterior derivative on this complex. But now let me go ahead and and add in my equivariant variable lambda. So let me just take a single U1 for simplicity. And now let me modify my exterior derivative to incorporate lambda, where lambda will have exterior derivative 0, as it should. We think of lambda as being a constant because it's just part of the cohomology of a point. This is our coefficient ring. We just want to make that 0. But for the form, it's not quite the original form, but what we have is we have a vector field given by the U1 flow, a vector field which generates this U1 flow. And what we do is we subtract the contraction of omega with this vector field, and then we multiply it by lambda. So this defines a new differential.
Does it square to 0?
No, it does not square to 0.
Okay.
In fact, if you square it, what you get is we get the d squared part will be 0, and dually, if we contract twice, we get 0, but there are two cross terms. And the cross terms by the Cartan formula, if I take interior times derivative and derivative times the interior multiplication, this is the Lie derivative. Okay, so this does not square to 0, but whenever the Lie derivative is 0, in other words, if we have an invariant form, it does square to 0. So what we do is we take the subcomplex of invariant elements of this ring. And now on here, it does square to 0. And then the thing that might be a useful observation is that the equivariant cohomology is indeed the cohomology of this complex. As long as we restrict to the invariant forms. Let me give an example.
Definition.
And they're equivalent, yeah. I gave two definitions, and this is the one that's this is the one that I've usually seen in the string theory literature, because it was developed by algebraic geometers going to the string theory. But I think that if this one you'll understand, right? And actually, ultimately, I think that this is probably the way to try to understand localization in string theory, and this is what we're trying to do, as I'll convince you and show you the progress we've made so far. Because it doesn't come out this way, it comes out, the string theory comes out this way, not surprisingly. I mean,
and this can trivially generalize to any group.
This generalizes to any torus, but if we work with a group, we need to go ahead and throw in some more generators. So we need, not only do we need commuting generators, we're going to need anti-commuting generators as well. This is in the paper I referred to, this survey paper of Moore and collaborators. This, with this generalized theory has worked out there. And this is actually known to mathematicians. This is called the Cartan model. So, and also this has come up in doing equivariant Morse theory in public. So the example with, let's take our PN example, is that here, if we take the Kähler form of PN, so one thing let me just point out is that this all hangs together, because remember this has cohomology degree 2. So what we do is that taking the derivative adds 1. Here contraction subtracts 1, but now we add 2 back, so this is a degree 1 operator in this complex. Okay, and now the formula is if we take the Kähler form of Pn, it turns out, and if we remind you that C is this vector field, which is given by our action, I guess I've erased it now, but it's the one with weights AI acting on the homogeneous coordinates. It turns out that up to normalization, that this is the interior multiplication. I'm sorry, wrong one. If I contract the vector field the Kähler form to get the one form turns out to be exact. Because of the norms, this is why algebraic geometers never write this. It's not holomorphic, but this is a true formula. So what this says is that dt of omega plus the sum of ai zi squared over the sum of zi squared times lambda is zero. So this is a representative of our equivariant cohomology class P. And it has all the right properties. If we take P in cohomology and restrict it to X, in this case being Pn, we get the Kähler form. In other words, the hyperplane classes we're supposed to do. Because what we've done is we just put lambda equals zero to go ahead and restrict to a fiber. And if we go ahead and take P and restrict it to one of the points Qi, we just put all the coordinates, you know, so of course restricting a two form to a point is zero. And if we just set all the coordinates equal to zero except for one coordinate, all we get there is AI. And that matches exactly what the algebraic geometers tell you characterizes that cohomology class. So this is something that that could be computed with analytically. Not, I've never seen this simple calculation in the literature. Somebody must have known it, but I've certainly never seen it in the physics literature. So there are very simple calculations that you can do like this to do this as some model of equivariant cohomology. Okay. And finally, so also it's very clear now why we can't just lift the hyperplane class to equivariant cohomology in this model, because if we go ahead and didn't have this term here, it would not be exact because of this term would be non-zero. We have to put something else in there to cancel out that term. Okay, so one of the uses of equivariant cohomology is because of localization. If we take X now and take its fixed point locus, it's a union of components. So I hope upper T is, as usual, the fixed point, lower T is equivariant. So if I want to go ahead and compute the equivariant cohomology of X, and we had some cohomology class that we wanted to integrate, the integration formula is that we sum over the fixed point sets of the equivariant restriction to the fixed point set, but we have to compensate by dividing by the order class of the normal bundle of Zi and X, again done equivariantly. And this is the localization formula that's in one form or another come up in string theory, is that we go ahead and take some problems that we don't know how to evaluate, and then we reduce it to problems over simpler spaces that we do know how to evaluate. So in the case of Gromov-Witten theory, is that Zi are these spaces, will just be these spaces MgN bar of 2D topological gravity.
Delvin,
question.
Do these
favor the upper? Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, so where's so is this too low? I can just tell me where to put the bar.
Yeah, that's a good line.
That's a good line. Okay. Okay. So what I just wrote then is that. Yes, I will. But before I forget, let me just say what the is in Gromov-Witten theory. Just to repeat what I just wrote, is that Zi's are products of these spaces that we get from 2D from the topological gravity sector of the problem. Because what we do is we trivialize the problem. We trivialize the space of maps to just be maps from spheres to spheres, multiple covering a sphere with a simple formula like z goes to z to the z, and then we might have to compensate by dividing by some finite group. And the question was to explain the notation. So here, what this is that here, this is an equivariant cohomology class. So what this is This is an equivariant cohomology class on ZI. And what this is that we have, we take the normal bundle of, we have to go above the line. So what this is that N ZI of X is the holomorphic normal bundle. To ZI and X. So it's generated by holomorphic normal vector fields to X. On E, the notation E sub T means equivariant Euler class. So if we want to think about what that means, is that we have the equivariant version of ZI sitting inside the equivariant version of X. And even though these are infinite dimensional spaces, they have finite codimension. The codimension of this inside that is the same as the codimension of ZI and X. And since this has finite codimension, the normal bundle is a finite vector bundle. It's a finite rank vector bundle. So it has an Euler class, a Topsherrn class. Being complex, everything has an orientation. So these are SON bundles. And they have an Euler class. Okay. Okay, so this is what has to be applied to Gromov-Witten theory. This is a unit if we go ahead. It's not a unit in the polynomial ring, so you have to go ahead and tensor with the quotient field to make it a unit. So it's a so the theorem is that the constant term doesn't vanish, so we can divide by it. Yeah. That's not non-trivial, but it's in the paper of Mattia and Bob, for example. So now in Gromov-Witten theory, we have the space of maps. So I'll use algebraic geometry notation. The space of maps with target space X and homology class beta of the image with genus G world sheets and insertion points will be written this way. This includes world sheets with mild singularities and possibly more components. There's a mapping there are mappings to X called the evaluation maps. The evaluation map takes such a map and simply evaluates the point, which just tells you the location of the insertion point under the map. And then the correlation function, if the omega I's, as before, are cohomology classes, we would go ahead and take these evaluation maps, pull back this is exactly what you do in the path integral. You go ahead and you insert your operators, and then you pull them back to the world sheet. You multiply them together, and then we integrate over the moduli space of maps. So we've localized the holomorphic maps, we've localized this. But now we don't know what the path integral measure, so we rely on mathematicians to tell us what this is. And this is what's called the virtual fundamental class. So this is a mystery to most physicists, and maybe to many mathematicians as well. But what this is some class. This is a homology class. It's not a physical object that you can get your hands on, but it's a homology class on the moduli space of complex dimension D, where D was that formula C1 of X dot beta plus et cetera. And now everything works out nicely, is that the ghost number condition says that we're integrating a cohomology class of complex dimension, codimension D over something of complex dimension D, and we get a number. So it really got the mathematics jump-started beyond the original applications to projective space is the work of Graeber and Pandurapande. And how to localize the virtual fundamental class. Specify the cohomology class. Well, this is what I'm going to explain a bit about how it comes up. But rather than do it, well, it comes from the path integral.
Okay.
Right, you know that.
Cool.
But that's the whole point. Well, I'm going to try to convince you that that in hindsight, maybe physicists could have gotten this first. I don't know, but so to it's non-trivial. It's non-trivial to go ahead and compute that. But the data that's involved in computing it is it's involved with the deformation theory and the obstruction theory, or said differently in terms of the string theory, it's in terms of the zero modes for the fermions. As it must be, that's what defines the path integral measure. So let me just give the formula. What their formula is I'll just write it in an admittedly somewhat cryptic way. Here's how the virtual fundamental class localizes. And that's the answer to your question. Okay, so what I'm doing is I'm not telling you what the path integral, what this is. I'm instead going to tell you what this becomes when you integrate over the virtual fundamental class here, what factors you have to insert here to make the localization formula true. Okay, so what do I mean by this? Is that here, if I have, maybe I didn't say this explicitly, is if we have a torus action here, we inherit a torus action here by composition with the automorphism. So we apply localization theory to the space of maps. And then in the space of maps, as we now integrate over these fixed point components, which are in applications just product of these 2D topological gravity moduli spaces, that what we have is we apply these formulas, we have to insert another factor that remembers that we were integrating over the virtual fundamental class. And here's what the factor is. So what I mean here is that these actually are bundles over the moduli space. Because what I'm doing is for any map, I'm giving a vector space. Here's a vector space. For any fixed map, these are all vector spaces. So what I mean by each of these terms, each term is a bundle. On my ZI, on my fixed point components of the map. I'll give an example in just a second. So what I mean is that to give a vector space for any, in other words, F is an element of ZI. For each ZI, I give you a vector space. That's what a vector bundle is. It's the assignment of a vector space to each point of a space.
Okay.
So when I go ahead and take these, I now have, and what I mean by this is that there's an omitted, just to keep from cluttering the notation, there's an Euler class involved here. So we go ahead and take all these bundles, take their Euler classes, combine them in such a way, and that's the factor that we have to put in. And again, the Euler class is, again, always equivariant. But these are things that you can actually compute.
One T is the tangent bundle?
T is the tangent bundle. Sorry, yeah, that's the T here is the group. This T is a tangent bundle of X, sigma, etc. I'm sparing you a little bit, is that it's a little more complicated. The marked points have to be in this formula, and I need some X groups instead of cohomology if the world sheet is singular. But maybe it's good enough.
I understand for each Zi, I can choose F1, then this is a vector bundle.
Right.
But then what do you mean by writing these two, one next to each other? Is that a product?
It's a product, yeah. This is a rational combination. We have two in the numerator and two in the denominator.
What do you mean by rational combination?
I'll give an example.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just mean that over here, this turns out to be some polynomial. These are all polynomials in lambda.
Oh.
So I just get P1 of lambda, P2 of lambda, divided by P3 of lambda, P4 of lambda, but they can also involve for example, the psi classes of 2D topological gravity in the application we have in mind. They can involve the lambdas, they can involve whatever cohomology classes we use to describe the Euler bundle.
So the P of lambdas as an example of an element of set H1, right?
P of lambda is an example of the Euler class of this bundle.
Right. So I understand what you mean by rational combination of those examples. But what do you mean by the rational combination of the cohomologies themselves?
Yes, so I've obviously
gotten this Euler out in front of everything.
Yeah, I've got an omitted Euler out in front of everything.
Euler of a bundle and Euler of a bundle.
So in the special case, let's say that all these H star terms are the fibers of bundles. Okay, part of the problem and the reason why string theorists didn't get this before mathematicians is because in the typical case, none of these are bundles. But they conspire to cancel out so that it's virtually a bundle. If we know that things are bundles, we know what to do. We go ahead and we take the four Fermi term, pull it down, take powers, and compute the Euler class. And we know how to do that. But we don't know what to do. There's some combination, but the fermions also come up in the d chi terms, and the rho d chi terms. And those will go ahead and give some interplay between these two different terms, so there could be cancellations between all these. Anyhow, this does roughly what we see in the Pathin rule, what we see in the action, that some combinations really will be simpler than each term separately. But in the case where each of these are the fibers of bundles, let me just call these bundles, let's say B1, B2, B3, and B4. We just mean take the equivariant Euler class of each, multiply 2 in the numerator, 2 in the denominator, and just divide. But I can't write this simply because the whole point is to do this in complete generality. And in complete generality, you have to do a formal multiplication first, even though these may not be bundles, and then at the end of the day, everything is a virtual bundle and we can do the computation. But anyhow, the point is that what you get is this is simply an equivariant cohomology class on our space Zi. We could do this for any, so in the case of Gromov-Witten theory, the Zi's again are just these products of